It's been years since Alaska began working toward the AKLNG project that would pipe natural gas from the North Slope to Nikiski. Where is the project at now, and how could it impact the Homer area? To answer these questions today, we are joined by Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation Senior Vice President Frank Richards. Welcome, Frank.
Good morning.
Good morning. We are also joined by Homer City Manager Katie Kester. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you.
And Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District Executive Director Tim Dillon. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you. Good morning.
And to our listening audience, you can be part of the conversation. We want to hear your questions and your comments. Please call us at 907-235-7721, or you can email us at info@kbbi.org. Let's start with just a little bit of background about the AKLNG. Frank, do you want to tell us about the different elements needed for the project?
Be glad to, Renee. Again, the Alaska LNG project is the large-scale commercialization effort that AGDC assumed responsibility for at the beginning of 2017 when former joint venture agreement entities BP, Conoco, Phillips, and ExxonMobil elected to hand over the responsibility to the state of Alaska through AGDC. And that project is a $43.4 billion project that is designed to be able to liberalize the stranded North Slope natural gas resources and bring them to the world market and to Alaskans along the route. So that project consists of three very large sub-projects, a gas treatment facility on Alaska's North Slope where the impurities such as carbon dioxide and hydrogen sulfide would be removed from the gas coming up out of the Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson reservoirs, taken out of the gas stream, and then given back to the reservoirs for reinjection. So, in other words, sequestration of that carbon dioxide, so not released to the environment. And then that gas would be pressurized and enter into an 807-mile-long pipeline that would lead from Prudhoe Bay down the Dalton Highway corridor, across and by Denali National Park, and then essentially ending up in the Kenai Peninsula Borough at Nikiski after crossing Cook Inlet from the Beluga area over to Nikiski, and then entering into a new liquefaction facility that would be constructed very near the existing location of the Kenai LNG plant and Agrium's ammonia plant. There, the gas would be cooled or chilled and down to minus 263 degrees Fahrenheit, where it becomes a liquid, and then it would be stored in two very large storage tanks and ready for shipment then to the world market. Along the pipeline route, I forgot to mention that there'll be compressor stations which will keep the gas pressurized to be able to keep the volumes that will be flowing down the pipeline. And in along that pipeline route, there would be opportunities then for offtakes for Alaskans, Alaska Resource Development, Alaska Utilities that would have the ability to access that gas for use and consumption in Alaska. Because that was one of the primary responsibilities given to AGDC initially when the legislature created us, was to make sure that Alaskans would be able to receive gas from the North Slope at a low cost and hopefully develop a project with the lowest possible risk for the state of Alaska in the development of the project. So those are the three major components of the project and the overall cost estimate.
And can you walk us through where the process is at right now?
Yes. When we assumed responsibility for the project in early 2017, we had just concluded approximately 3.5 years of effort, which was called pre-front-end engineering and design, or pre-FEED level of work. And that was engineering, environmental data collection, socioeconomic analysis that was done with the likes of BP, Conoco, and ExxonMobil, to prepare an application to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, who has the responsibility for siting and authorizing LNG facilities in the United States. So that 3.5 year work effort culminated in a significant amount of engineering and environmental data The cost of that effort was approximately $600 million, borne by the four parties equally or by their respective ownership of the gas. So for Alaska's stake in that effort, it was approximately 25% of the $600 million that was contributed to conclude that work. When that pre-FEED effort concluded, the work was handed over to AGDC unencumbered to be able to go forward and present an application to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for that siting and safety authorization. FERC accepted that application in mid-2017 and then initiated soon thereafter an environmental impact statement process where they are conducting under the National Environmental Policy Act an environmental review of the impacts of the entire project, in particular the sub-projects they talked about earlier, to determine, you know, what is going to be the least environmentally damaging practicable alternative for the project in total. At the same time, FERC engineering and safety folks are also looking at the individual components of the major plants, the gas treatment plant and the liquefaction plant, to determine whether or not those plants are going to be in compliance with FERC's safety regulations, as well as with the Pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Administration regulations. So that effort is underway right now as well. So we have two parallel paths, one an environmental process and the other an engineering safety process, and that is being worked on a daily basis by AGDC as the project proponent and the regulators being FERC and its cooperating agencies under the EIS.
And the pipeline also needs final authorization for land ownership in Nikiski. What's the status of that?
Okay, so the liquefaction facility in Nikiski is a site that's approximately 900 acres that includes bluff and waterfront properties, but also uplands properties that would be able to accommodate the very large industrial facility to liquefy the gas. That effort to acquire that land was initiated by an entity called Alaska LNG LLC, and that entity is owned by BP, Conoco, and ExxonMobil. Through 2014, through 2015, and 2016, they acquired approximately 600 acres of land within that 900-acre plot that is they still own. AGDC is in negotiations with the LLC owners on trying or obtaining a purchase option agreement with them so that AGDC would then become the responsible owner of that plot. And when FERC provides the authorization would be the land title owner. AGDC has not conducted any additional land purchases at this time. We've been focusing in on the regulatory and environmental process to make sure that we have a permitted project first.
And I want to involve our other guests as well, but first just one more sort of question about where this is at right now. In December of 2017, the former Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation head Keith Meyer and former Governor Bill Walker went to China and made an agreement with three entities there to explore financing, building, and buying gas from the Alaska LNG project. The Gas Line Corporation was supposed to have a deal with these three Chinese partners by the end of December, but that deadline was missed. What is the status of those negotiations right now?
What you're referring to is what we call the Joint Development Agreement, where AGDC, the state of Alaska, and the three Chinese entities of Sinopec, the Bank of China, and the China Investment Corporation were working towards achieving definitive agreements on the offtake or the purchase of LNG from the Alaska LNG project. So the goal at that time when the agreement was signed in November of 17 was that we would have definitive agreements by the end of 2018. Well, as you can imagine, a commercial enterprise such as Alaska LNG with the commitments required of off-takers or buyers of the LNG that would be essentially very long-term commitments for 20 to 25 years for tens of billions of dollars, it's a considerable effort and an economic consideration for all parties in the process. So we have been negotiating with the entities over this time frame. It is still an active negotiation that we are continuing on, but at the time we had not reached the anticipated goal of having those agreements by the end of the year, and so that time frame has been extended.
And do you have a contract for the extension of negotiations?
It was negotiated in terms of the discussions, and I think that the parties have agreed to extend it. I'm not aware of a signed extension contract.
Let's talk about what could happen with the city of Homer if the LNG project comes through. Let's start by talking a little bit about jobs. Before this even gets built, is there a need for more field work jobs, more surveying work done at the site?
Absolutely. Renee, would you like me to take this? This is Frank.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so yes, there will be a considerable amount of work that will be necessary as we continue to develop the project. As I said, once we receive that authorization from FERC, that gives us the authority to be able to go out and implement work efforts, including field work. There will be additional resource needs that need to be identified, in particular gravel sources along the pipeline route. There's going to be a need for field services for cultural resource surveys to make sure that we have and identify the cultural resource along the route at the plant site so that we can make sure that we are going to make sure that we mitigate them properly to meet the compliance with the law. There'll be a significant amount of survey work. The entire pipeline right-of-way and all the plant sites will have to be brought up to industry standard with topographic and horizontal survey control. So that's just the initiation of the work before even any of the construction that would begin, which would ultimately lead to a peak construction workforce of approximately 12,000 people. And that number is a very daunting number because, it is a large number to consider in terms of how we would attract folks to work on the project. Our estimates that Alaskan workforce would be able to meet most of those needs, but not necessarily all of those needs, because, again, there's going to be other work that will be ongoing. So the type of work that will be ongoing in construction is what you would anticipate from equipment operators, steel workers, surveyors, engineers, construction managers, pipe fitters, welders, to name a few. And so that those work skill sets that will be relying on Alaskans to be able to come to the workplace to perform and execute the project, I think provides a great opportunity in the near future when we enter into construction that will be providing high-paying jobs during the construction effort, which will last a period of 5 to 6 years. So not just in Nikiski, but along the pipeline route, and again in Prudhoe Bay, there will be a tremendous amount of workforce needed to be able to accomplish this project.
And Tim, you just brought out a pamphlet about, jobs that we might see in constructions. Do you want to expand on what we might see for construction jobs?
Well, you know, one of the things that the folks with LNG have done so far is they've worked really close with labor and with folks like our organization to try and identify all those different kinds of jobs that are needed. And there's several different pieces that AKLNG have done that are available. I know they're on the website also that lays this out. Just in front of me, I've got the early numbers are 295 carpenters, 397 electricians and instrument fitters, 447 iron workers, 2,311 laborers, 1,864 engineers, 3,519 teamsters, 1,566 pipe fitters, welders, and insulators, and then 1,452 other. So what we're working with right now is not just with Frank and their organization, but also with the cities to try and make sure that we have the workforce ready when this project gets to the point where it's, yes, let's go. So there's a lot of numbers here. There's a lot of need, but there are a lot of people. And our goal is the first people we want hired are here on the Kenai Peninsula. Second of all, in Alaska, and then third, we'll look outside. But we have to be ready, or else this thing's going to pass us by.
So, I mean, how do we get ready? How does Homer position itself to make sure that we get some of these jobs?
Well, currently, we're working with the city manager. We have periodic meetings with all the city managers because it's going to affect each and every one of the cities. In fact, Frank actually came to our last meeting that we had with the city managers from here on the peninsula. We had Soldovia, Homer, Seward, Kenai, Soldotna, and the borough all present. And we're talking through these things, trying to see what we have. At the workforce or at the Industry Outlook Forum last week, I talked briefly about workforce development and all of our partners right now. We have some great programs out there right now. We just have to make sure that they match up with what's needed. We have to make sure that when someone goes through a welding program, that it's what the contractors really want. You know, it's great to have a piece of paper and a certificate, but is this exactly what that person that's doing the hiring needs? So we're working on that right now. We're trying to make sure all those different areas are covered. People with CDLs, you know, we're fortunate we've been able to open up two CDL operations here on the Kenai Peninsula in the last 2 years. Before 2 years ago, you had to go up to the valley in order to get a CDL. There's going to be a tremendous need for heavy equipment operators, things of that nature. So we've got things moving in the right direction, and we just have to keep the lines of communication open and keep having those discussions, and that's what we're in the middle of doing.
And either Frank or Tim, do we know in terms of people having those jobs, are people going to come down to Homer and be here short term, kind of like they are on the slope, or will people come in to work long term on this?
Frank, you want to handle that one?
Yes, I would say that just one follow-up on what Tim just said about a workforce development. And I think that there's resources out there that industry folks should look at, and that is with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. They've put out a workforce development plan that is on their website that is linked from AGDC's website, which is agdc.us. So parties that are interested in looking to see what we're talking about here in terms of specifics, in terms of job skills and numbers, requirements, that's out there. So please avail yourself of that. The work activities that we're talking about will be, as I said, 5 to 6 years of construction effort. So, for instance, at the Nikiski site for the liquefaction facility, there will be approximately 5,000 workers on that site to put together the liquefaction facilities, the major tanks, the marine facilities, which have included trestle and two berths for the LNG vessels to tie up to. So that work will be ongoing for a significant amount of time. So individuals that want to work on the project would have that opportunity to work for those contractors for multiple years, hopefully. And we are anticipating that, again, for the Kenai Peninsula Borough, there is an active workforce that has construction-related background and experience that would be very valuable to be able to come to this project to utilize Alaskans. And that's one of the things that when AGDC was created by the Alaska State Legislature is that they identified that we need to focus on Alaskans, that we are here to provide hopefully a lower-cost energy source to Alaskans, but also to provide a workforce of Alaskans to be able to construct this project. So that's part of our mission, and we take that extremely seriously, and that's why we've worked with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development on a workforce plan. Part of the challenge that we've seen in previous iterations of the goal of this project to liberate the gas on the North Slope is that folks got trained up, but then there wasn't work for them to actively engage with to hone their skills to be ready for the next pipeline project. So that's part of the discussion that, from the legislative perspective, and I think the Dew administration, is that they want to make sure we have Alaskans trained up and skilled through experience to be able to come work on the project.
You know, and if I can add, you know, one of the things that is going on right now is the Department of Labor does a great job working with what's called the Construction Academy. The Construction Academy on the peninsula is actually located in one of our facilities up in Kenai. Those are all free classes for you to be able to take, and especially our younger people or somebody who's looking to change careers, you know, middle of the midstream, for you to be able to take a 4-week course on electric or diesel mechanic or welding to see if it's something that you're interested in before you invest, you know, a lot of time and energy and dollars in it.
And obviously we want to see the people of Kenai Peninsula getting a lot of the jobs, but will it also mean that more people are coming to Homer to work on the project?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things that Katie probably can answer because she's been involved in a variety of those discussions.
Thank you, Tim and Renee. You know, I think people will be living in Homer because it's a wonderful place to live. And some of those people will be certainly working during construction and hopefully long term also with 1,000 jobs long term over a 25-year period that this project will create. But I really think that Homer is in this sweet spot where we have an opportunity to benefit from the regional economic development, an opportunity for our skilled laborers to be employed, but we're not in the center of it, so it won't totally transform, you know, every single profession in our town. So I see one of the biggest impacts, aside from employment, being to our Port and Harbor, and our Port and Harbor really being a key partner with AKLNG during the first stage, of course, of construction, when they're going to be bringing in materials, and then long term, you know, 15 to 20 ships a month is the estimate. And all those ships are going to need support tugs. They're going to need pilot boats. They're going to need resources in marine pilots, another profession that we have out of Homer. So I see our Port and Harbor and our community being really a support community for the project. And that's just the place I want to be as a city manager, not in the boom and bust of the project, but it being a part of the suite of what makes up the economy of Homer.
And people talk about now our harbor sort of bursting at the seams. Will our harbor be able to take increased traffic, increased boats for these projects?
Well, that's a great question because we have been working, the city of Homer has been working on a port expansion project. And that's to build a large vessel moorage facility. It would be kind of on the other side of the harbor master's office by the deep water dock there. And that is really a project for Alaska, for vessels that are 250 feet or larger, of which we will have a demand from this project, but also from oil and gas exploration in the inlet, also from fishermen who are fishing all over Alaska and want to home port their vessels here. All kinds of large vessels want to home port in Alaska, not have to travel to Seattle, which is hundreds of thousands of dollars to home port their vessel. And we have amazing marine trades professionals here. And so that's a project that the city is currently engaging the Army Corps of Engineers on to further. And we think it'll be a key resource for AKLNG. But that's not the only reason to do it.
But if we got AKLNG, would that potentially help get funding for the expansion of the harbor?
Absolutely. You know, the Army Corps needs to be able to prove that there's a significant economic benefit to the Port and Harbor expansion project. And part of that is reduced transportation costs. And part of that is how it contributes to the overall national economy. And certainly this project is a big picture project, and we would be a key player in that.
We also, just so that you know, there's been a lot of discussions with our friends with Senator Sullivan and Senator Murkowski. In fact, Katie was in a meeting with Senator Sullivan and myself here recently where this was one of the major topics. So I think it's on people's radar, but I think it's really important for us to be looking at these kind of activities and some of the other things. You know, I actually mentioned to Joe, your new CEO for the hospital down here, the impacts that this kind of a project is going to have on the medical concerns. You know, all of a sudden you dump 5,000 more people onto the peninsula, and you're going to have, you know, some of your resources stretched pretty much. And I know Frank and his folks have looked at a variety of these things, but it's not just the medical side. Then, you know, you look at restaurants, you look at food providers, you look at all those other things, and there's no place for it to go but up, and you've got to make sure that you're prepared for that. So it's for some folks that are just looking at it and say, it's over in Nikiski, it's not going to affect us, it's, you know, just a little project and that's it. It's going to affect pretty much everybody on the Kenai Peninsula.
And how do we make sure, sort of as Katie said, that this isn't just a boom and bust, that, you know, there's more resources or infrastructure come to support more workers and people, and then they leave?
Well, I think part of that conversation will be the PILT, or the payment in lieu of taxes, that the project will be contributing. Because it's a government-owned project, it's not taxed like we would tax, you know, Hillcorp or a private company. And so that's where the conversation of what that payment in lieu of taxes amount is and how it's distributed across Alaska. And the city of Homer has been active in advocating for municipal representation on the board that kind of makes those decisions. So, you know, Frank can probably share more of the details of what that may look like, but we need to make sure that municipalities have a seat at that table, because there will be impacts for the entire borough on our infrastructure, on our schools, on our roads, and the like.
And this has kind of been touched on, but Katie, can you talk about the involvement that municipalities have had in this and that Homer has had, and going forward, the representation that Homer will have in this project?
Yeah, so we actually have, there's a number of advisory committees that are advisory to AKLNG, and the borough has actually been involved in organizing those. And we have a Councilmember Tom Strusis, who is active on, and Frank, you probably know the acronym exactly, but he's active on a Kenai Peninsula Borough Advisory Board for AKLNG. And of course, every opportunity, the project and Frank and his team come to our Alaska Municipal League meetings, to our city manager meetings, and keep us updated on the project. And then officially, we have, the City of Homer has joined as a partner in the project through the passage of Resolution 18091 that advocates for Nikiski as the terminus of the project. And that also allows us to be kind of in the loop on those conversations and a partner as we move forward.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the AKLNG and how it could impact the Homer area. If you want to be part of the conversation, you can give us a call at 907-235-7721, or you can email us at info@kbbi.org. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk more about the project and its potential impacts. Thank you. Good morning. You're listening to the Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. Today we're talking about the AKLNG and its potential impact on the Homer area. I want to go back to something that was said a little earlier about the potential ripple effect of this on businesses here. I mean, could we see this really help, potentially local businesses?
I believe it will. I think it's going to be. But again, people have to be prepared for it. I know we all, when May rolls around, it's okay, all of a sudden here comes, all of our tourists and things. Instead of just planning for a 3 or 4 month, hit, you're talking 5 or 6 years. And then hopefully some of those people decide to stay permanently because they want to keep their kids in the schools or, quality of living is important to them. And they decide, hey, I really like Homer. I like Seward. I'm not supposed to say Seward on here, I'm sure. I like living on the peninsula. Katie and I have an inside joke between Homer and Seward. So, but, those things, there is going to be a ripple effect. And I think that that's something that everybody needs to be prepared for. And I think, we've tried to make sure working with Frank and the rest of the staff that whenever they're available and they come and they make so many different presentations to different groups and things. For people to understand, whether it be the school district or the college or Avtech or any of the other places, that it's going to impact them, which is a good thing.
And Renee, go ahead,
jump
Frank.
In on that too.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would say again, certainly when we talk about the construction at $43.4 billion, that's a huge number, and we talk about the wages that will be paid to Alaskans working on the project. But the ripple effect that you're talking about, the economic ripple effect, as those folks spend the money in Alaska, pay their taxes to the city of Homer, pay, to buy their groceries in the food stores, that ripple effect from our socioeconomic analysis could be 6 to 8 times. So that has a tremendous benefit, I think, to the Alaskan economy. And again, during that 5 to 6 year construction window, yes, that will be very beneficial. But after that, with 1,000 jobs for the operations, the long-term operations of this project, again, they'll be spread out from the Kenai Peninsula Borough to Prudhoe Bay and along the pipeline route. But still, those 1,000 jobs, in addition to contracts that will be necessary to operate and maintain the pipeline and the infrastructure, will also have a multiplying effect into the Alaskan economy. So what this also does is you go farther upstream into the oil and gas basins on the North Slope or elsewhere in Alaska, is that it provides now an opportunity, whereas before, as folks found oil on the North Slope and they found associated gas, there was always the issue they had to deal with the gas and reinject it in back into the reservoir. Now they'll have a conduit to do that. So that may mean ultimately that we have additional oil and gas developments on the North Slope, which means that Alaskans, through our permanent fund, will have increased value added to it through the royalties and taxes that are paid to the state of Alaska. So in terms of the long-term ripple effect, I think ultimately this project and our ability to execute it will have a tremendous positive benefit to Alaska, both in the near term and multi-generational. And looking out into the future in terms of what the benefits will be.
Let's take a caller. Carl, welcome to the Coffee Table.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Has the right-of-way been cleared all the way from Prudhoe Bay to Nikiski for the pipeline? And I'm a boat builder and interested in technology. And, boy, the LNG gas technology... for the valves and the engineering that's going on for this LNG movement that's going on the planet is just exceptional. So the training and the putting Alaska in touch with progressive and contemporary design of all the control systems and electrical control systems that operate these LNG rigs and vessels is just phenomenal. So I'm in support of us going to a greener fuel and having this LNG happen here is pretty exciting from just a technological point of view worldwide and how international this field has become with creating safety. And thanks for putting on the show. And tell me about the right-of-way. I can't believe the right-of-way is already cleared for this. This is amazing.
Thanks for your call,
hey, thank
Carl.
You, Carl. I appreciate the question. With respect to the right-of-way, AGDC was granted the right-of-way by the Alaska State Legislature when they created us so that we would have a right-of-way. Part of the efforts that we're working with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission on is that we'll be crossing federal lands. So we have approximately 200-plus miles of federal lands that we'll be crossing. So at the outcome of that process will be a grant by the Department of Interior through the Bureau of Land Management to AGDC for a right-of-way lease across those federal lands. And then we have private lands that we'll also be crossing, and we're entering into negotiations, or will be entering into negotiations with those private landowners. But there has been no clearing efforts. We are in from Prudhoe Bay south down to Livengood, we are in close proximity to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, but we're not in the very same right-of-way. With the high-pressure natural gas pipeline, we have to be somewhat separate from the oil line for safety and security reasons. So there will be clearing, but none has been done to date. And on your comment about, again, the technology and ultimately the benefit of leading towards cleaner fuel, I'd say you're absolutely right. We're going to be utilizing the latest technology to make sure that we have efficient and safe and effective plant design so that we can run this most efficiently and utilize the valuable resource that we have available to us. But the long-term benefit in terms of environmental benefit, for the commercialization of the large resource on the North Slope and our markets, Asia is the customer that we are in closest proximity to. We have the advantages for direct shipping to them. But what we're seeing is an evolution, a migration from coal-burning fuel generation in countries such as China or India or Thailand or Vietnam and migrating to LNG. So that means that there'll be less carbon, less dirty coal that is burned and put into the environment. And Alaska, and so those countries will benefit from that conversion, but Alaska as being downwind from those countries will also see the benefit because we won't have those gases then coming into our airspace and affecting our environment or our oceans through potential gas acidification. So we see this as a benefit not only to Alaskans, but also to the environment in general from the coal, shifting from coal in Asia.
Let's take a call from Jim. Jim, welcome to the coffee table.
Hi, good morning. I have two questions. One, I'm wondering, is the government of China intending to provide any of the labor for this project? And my second question would be, in the event that the state were to default, what will be the remedy to the Chinese government? Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. In regards to the government of China, purely about the China development agreement that we are working on with the three Chinese entities, Sinopec as a gas buyer, the Bank of China as a debt financier, and the China Investment Corporation as a potential providing equity. There's no agreement to have Chinese workers on the project site. We're working with the Chinese to be purchasers of the offtake of the project, meaning to buy the LNG. So in that regard, we aren't anticipating, and nor would there likely be any authority to provide, again, a major Chinese workforce. That's been a consideration that has been raised in many instances to me, from the administration to the legislature. And so I think we want to be able to assure Alaskans that, again, it's going to be Alaskans first, and then utilizing American talent as necessary to meet the needs. Now, I will say that there will be opportunities for countries to be able to provide module construction into these projects because the two main plants, the gas treatment plant in Prudhoe Bay and the Nikiski liquefaction facility, will be modularized construction. And those are going to be extremely large, world-class size modules that are built now in Asia. So there will be workforce in those countries developing those modules that will likely be the most cost-effective for AGDC to design and construct and ultimately erect in Alaska. Now, you asked, the second question was about the state risk in regards to default. When AGDC was set up again by the legislature gave us the authority to bond projects, but there's no recourse to the state of Alaska. That would only come if the legislature so granted AGDC that responsibility. So right now, we have there's no recourse on any of the financial aspects of the project to the state of Alaska.
And as we're talking about buying LNG, one question I wanted to ask is that some legislators right now are questioning whether LNG is profitable right now. The Wall Street Journal has reported that there is so much natural gas in places such as New Mexico and Texas that it's sometimes worthless, and that some companies have even paid buyers to take it away. Is there concern that it might be difficult to get investors if this isn't profitable right now?
Well, as we've always identified, we cannot go forward and build an uneconomic project. We're only going to be able to attract folks, whether it be buyers or financiers or equity partners, if it proves out to be economic. So that's where it's contingent on AGDC and our work that was previously done with producer parties to make sure that we are designing a plant that is going to be able to achieve an economic output that the world market would want to buy and would want to commit to for long-term deals. Now, Alaska's North Slope gas is essentially a stranded asset, similar to what you're talking about in some of the lower 48 states. So right now, there's no sale of that gas to anybody. And so the producers aren't even able to identify it as a resource on their financial records. Only until there is an output or a way to sell that gas to the world can the producers even mark or identify that gas as a resource. So there's a benefit to those resource developers, the leaseholders on Alaska's North Slope, to be able to have an outlet for it. And so the work that we are doing and have done with them and will continue to do with them is going to make sure that we have a project that will ultimately be economic or the project won't go forward.
And I just wanted to chime in to reiterate what Frank has been saying. KPED is an independent organization. You know, I don't work for Frank or for AGDC, but we have been involved in a lot of these discussions and a lot of these meetings. And, you know, it's been talked about a lot, making sure that it's financially viable, because nobody wants to see something happen that it's not viable. The other part about the three potential partners with the three different organizations from China. I actually was able to be involved with some of that over the last couple of summers. And the concept of, I know it came up at the forum last week, of somebody being concerned about, boatloads of folks being, shipped over here to work. That's never been part of the discussion. That's not something that that I've been involved with at all. And I know where Frank is coming from. And I've been the one that's been sitting there constantly saying Kenai Peninsula staff, workers first. And he probably to some extent, him and Keith were getting tired of me saying it. But we want to make sure that the workforce comes from Alaska first and foremost. And I believe they know that, they understand that, and they're trying to tell us, okay, here's what you need to do in order to make sure that we're all ready, because we're not ready yet.
Let's take a call from Paul. Paul, welcome to the coffee table.
Hi, thanks. This is Paul Seaton, and I've been supportive of this project for a long time, but I was at a legislative budget and audit conference just in December, and it was rolled out that AGDC and the Chinese are looking at a new model where the Chinese would actually finance and repay the very, very low interest rate, loan from the Bank of China, and our 25% of the gas, because we're taking our royalty and our taxes in gas, would be financed at market rates of 8 or 9%, which essentially divides this into two projects. And I'm just wondering, did the Chinese reject the unitized one project financing model and is now only going to do this if they separate their financing of their gas from ours, because they could end up with extremely low financing, a very economic project for 75% of the gas. And we as the state of Alaska, being the equity side, could end up with something that have non-competitive gas, and I don't even know how we'd analyze that fully, and just depending upon AGDC's analysis of it. So anyway, I appreciate Frank commenting on that.
Thank you, Representative Seaton, and again, thanks for your time that you served in the legislature. I really appreciated the many conversations that we've had over the years. I would say that what Paul is talking about is the cost structure that we had worked on with the Chinese, and that was the joint development agreement, which was based on a debt to equity ratio of approximately 75% of the project cost would be as debt financing, and then 25% of the project cost would be equity. So that's where it's akin to a mortgage that we would take on our homes, and normally we'd be at an 80% debt financing, or we would have to pay in mortgage insurance. In this case, the structure of the deal with the Chinese was that we were talking to them about China financing the debt for the project. In return, they would receive 75% of the output of the liquefaction facility. And with that, then, the cost of the downstream product, the actual gas molecule leading into a Chinese factory or to a Chinese home, would be financed by the Chinese themselves. And so the interaction between the debt financier, in this case, let's say the Bank of China, and then the entity selling the gas, which would be potentially Sinopec, is that transaction would be within the country of China. And the biggest issue would be that certainly the Chinese debt financier would like the highest cost that they could get and receive, but the Chinese consumer would like the lowest cost of gas that they could receive. So there's the push and pull effort within that arrangement. AGDC is working to be able to identify a cost to deliver the gas to those entities that would factor in the cost of the upstream gas, the cost of the infrastructure development, meaning the construction and operational cost of the LNG facility, and then ultimately the cost to provide that gas to the off-taker, in this case, the Chinese Sinopec. So the outcome of that work effort was looking at gas being able to be sold to the Chinese at near market rates, so that it would provide then an opportunity for the debt financing of the project to be funded by an outside source that would ultimately allow gas to Alaskans at a relatively low cost of approximately $5 to $6 dollars per million BTU. So that's where we had the push and pull between the debt financing and the equity financing. We are still working on an equity model that would make it profitable for equity investors into the project. But again, this deal for the debt financing was going to be based on a 20 to 25 year contract term that would be paid for by the consumers of that gas, with the benefit being to Alaskans able to get a project built at a lower cost of financing and a lower cost of energy to Alaskans.
We just have about a couple of minutes left, and I want to talk a little bit about, you know, next steps and the future of the LNG project. One thing that we should touch on is that just recently, Keith Meyer, the state's Gasline Corporation president, was fired. Should people of the Kenai Peninsula expect a different structure for the project now that Meyer is gone?
Well, Renee, I would say, you know, what we've experienced is, again, a part of a normal transition process that you have with any incoming administration. In this case, the state administration with Governor Dunleavy, he has the opportunity to put in place across the spectrum of the state government through his departments, but also in state-owned corporations through our board of directors, and provide new direction. And so what we had is a new board coming in and a new direction for AGDC to make sure that we are advancing a project that will provide gas to Alaskans at the lowest cost and provide a project that, should the state want to continue to participate in it, would reduce the risk substantially to the state of Alaska. So our direction is to continue forward. We are going to achieve the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission authorization, which will occur about a year from now as we go through the environmental process that I talked about earlier, but also the engineering review. We are receiving and corresponding with FERC on that on a nearly daily basis. So that's going to be part of our primary focus, is to make sure that we can put forward a project that is not only cost effective, economic, but also technically safe and meets the regulations of the federal government. At the same time, we are going to continue our interactions with the buyer community of Asia to identify how we are able to essentially sell to the Asian markets at a gas price that will be, again, meet the industry standards that are going to be there for the long-term benefit of not only Alaskans, but in terms of our permanent fund, but also for our treasury.
Well, it looks like that's about all the time we have. I want to thank all of our guests. Katie Kester, Homer City Manager, thank you. Tim Dillon, Executive Director of the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District. Thank you. And Frank Richards, Alaska Gasline Development Corporation Senior Vice President. Thank you all for coming on the show. And thank you for our listeners for tuning in. This has been the Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer.